From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. This week, Sarasota County Commissioners heard public testimony on a proposed ordinance to ban pet stores from selling dogs, cats, and rabbits that come from commercial breeders. If adopted, Sarasota would become the first county in the state to impose such a rule. Supporters point to shelters that are already overwhelmed with pets in need of forever homes and say it would help combat puppy mills. Pet store owners say they already get their animals from reputable breeders and that the proposed rule could put them out of business. We'll hear from both sides. Plus, the Lee County Metropolitan Planning Organization is in the process of developing a countywide 2040 long-range transportation plan. A closer look at what's in development and how the public can get involved. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The Lee County Metropolitan Planning Organization is in the process of developing a countywide 2040 long-range transportation plan. Strategic planners are working on taking into account a variety of the region's growing transportation needs, including driving, biking, walking, public transportation, and even freight. We'll take a closer look at the process, what's already been done, and how the public can get involved. That conversation's coming up later this hour. But first, Sarasota County Commissioners are revisiting a proposed ordinance to ban pet stores from selling dogs, cats, and rabbits that come from commercial breeders. The issue first came before the commission in 2012. If adopted, Sarasota would become the first county in the state to impose such a rule. The Herald Tribune reports commissioners heard nearly 4 hours of often impassioned testimony on the proposal Monday. Supporters of the ordinance say area shelters are overwhelmed and that it would help reduce the number of animals in need and of forever homes. They also accuse retail pet stores of acquiring animals, mainly dogs, from so-called puppy mills, where animals are sick and often kept in poor conditions. Opponents of the ordinance, including pet store owners, refute that claim, saying they purchase from reputable breeders and that the proposed ordinance could put them at risk of going out of business in the region. They also say that people shopping for a specific breed won't go to shelters, but rather will turn to backyard breeders who are poorly regulated. Sarasota County Commissioners will hold a public hearing on the issue January 27th of next year. In the meantime, we'll be taking a closer look today. Joining me now is Petland President and CEO Joe Watson. Petland is a franchise operation with full-service specialty retail pet stores across the U.S., including in Sarasota. They also have locations in Canada, Japan, China, Mexico, and South Africa. Joe Watson, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
We're also speaking with Ed Sayers. He's former president of the ASPCA and currently president of the Pet Industry Joint Advisory Council. Ed Sayers, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
And we're also speaking with Corey Menken. Corey is senior director of the ASPCA Puppy Mill Campaign. That's the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Thanks for joining us, Corey.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me.
And listeners can connect with our guests and join the conversation. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live. And Joe Watson, let's begin with you. I mentioned that Sarasota County would be the first in Florida to adopt such an ordinance, but several municipal level governments in the state have already adopted similar rules. On a national or even an international level, are these kinds of proposals something that comes up often? Does Petland closely watch these?
John, yes, we obviously do. We see these pop up because people have a passion for pets. And the local activists have taken to local government to help push through their perspective on how to best deal with the worst breeders in the country, referred to as puppy mills. And while we disagree with this approach, we certainly respect their passion for pets.
And, you know, part of the impetus behind this proposed ordinance in Sarasota and others on this issue, is, as you've alluded to, is, you know, combating the proliferation of puppy mills, you know, where I think we all know there's been well-documented mistreatment and deplorable conditions for animals in there. Pet stores in general have gotten somewhat of a reputation of working with such unscrupulous breeders. Do you think pet land may sometimes get painted with that same broad brush?
Well, I think when any organization or any group of activists try to dehumanize an entire segment of the population, a lot of people get swept in with that activity. And the fact of the matter is that the local activists and the pet industry share more in common than not. We agree on a lot more than not. No one believes that puppy mills should stay in business. The fact of the matter is that we believe there's a different avenue to address the issue of puppy mills. And what we are doing at Petland is we sponsor breeder conferences with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with the American Kennel Club, and we bring in experts to talk about science-based issues. We're visiting breeders, we're doing our homework, and we have sourcing requirements. Pet store bans will only force that level of activity to go away. We don't see the Humane Society of the United States, we don't see Corey and the ASPCA at any of the breeder conferences visiting breeders or providing any breeder education. When all the pet stores in the United States are closed, if that's their goal, not a single breeder will go out of business, and not a single puppy mill has gone out of business due to any of the bans that have been passed thus far. So while we all are passionate, we all have a common goal of putting puppy mills out of business, the reality is we come at this from a different perspective. We believe that boots on the ground, educating people, influencing people is the best avenue.
Tell me about what steps Petland or Petland franchise owners around the country do to make sure that they are, in fact, working with reputable breeders.
In the United States, there are 10,000 breeders. That's a lot of breeders, 10,000. According to HSUS's website, there's 10,000 breeders. Of the 10,000, so we've got to kind of put this in perspective, of those 10,000, only 17% are USDA licensed and inspected. The USDA is obviously the same organization that inspects the food our kids eat at school and keeps us safe, so we understand they're a reputable organization. Only 17% of those 10,000 breeders have made the decision to sell to pet stores. The 8,300 non-USDA licensed breeders are not inspected by the federal government. And even Corey's organization states as few as 2% of all puppies are obtained by pet stores. So 2% of the puppies in the United States are obtained by pet stores. Those pet stores can only buy puppies from those 17%, the top 17% of those breeders that are inspected. And so the question really is, the 83% that aren't inspected, that are selling on the Internet, and by the way, of all of the raids that are advertised by the animal welfare groups, none of them are USDA licensed and inspected. So our focus is on that 17%. We can't focus on the 83%. So through breeder conferences, we work with those 17%. Through visitations, our franchisees, our corporate staff visit the breeders. We have a do not buy list because some of those 17% don't match the criteria that we have established. And so by being in at the breeder's facility, taking pictures, showing our customers in our stores, our breeder books, these are the breeders we buy from, we feel that provides the customer some transparency back to where these puppies come from.
All right. And Ed Sayers, you testified at Monday's public hearing. Tell us a bit about the nature of your testimony, given your background.
Well, for me, it was about the supply and demand and how it's changed. I mean, I started working, you know, 40-plus years ago, and we had an incredibly tragic overpopulation situation where we were euthanizing 12 to 15 million dogs, and Americans were acquiring about 5 million dogs a year. And today, thankfully, through incredible collaboration among animal advocates of all kinds, we're now euthanizing about 1.2 million dogs a year, and Americans are acquiring about 7 to 8 million. So that supply-demand change is what intrigued me about how is this going to continue, because it's not either-or. Adoption is always the first option in my whole career, but there's not going to be enough homeless animals as the human population grows to fulfill that need, and so how do we regulate toward high-standard breeders? And, you know, Petland's a good example of how to do it, is the kind of discretion they use in choosing the breeders they choose. So with regulation, you get to bring in the good and keep the bad out. And with a ban, you know, you have a situation where the good are out, and in a sense, you even open the market more to the unregulated side.
Hey, Ed, do you think that there's a, you know, a basic guideline or set of guidelines that, you know, pet stores like Petland could or should be using to make sure that they are, in fact, working with these commercial breeders? I think Joe's touched on this a bit, but I know you've visited some of these non-scrupulous breeders before. You've seen some of these conditions.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, Petland's criteria is very good. I mean, no direct violations in the last year is certainly something that everyone would expect. You don't want any kind of substandard animal care. For me, in my career, all I'd seen really was substandard because the ASPCA, we did some excellent work in rescuing puppies from puppy mills and rescuing the mother dogs. But these were all substandard, non-licensed places. And I really didn't distinguish between licensed and unlicensed. And I said, you know, to me, they were all puppy mills. And somebody asked me if I'd ever been to a licensed USDA breeder. And I said, well, in 40 years, no, actually, I have not. And then I went around and realized that there was a difference. There was a significant difference. And I see these, you know, high standard breeders who sell into pet stores who have, you know, as high standards as hobby breeders that I've visited. And I realized that, you know, there is this other segment that are doing responsible work. They're hardworking. As Joe said, they attend the breeder symposiums and continue to educate themselves. And you, so you have to allow that high standard in. And again, this demand is going to continue. It's not an opinion. It's a growing population. And thankfully, the trend is that the homeless dog population is declining, and that's a good thing. But again, we want to encourage the high standards and block out the puppy mills.
Sarasota County Commissioners this week heard several hours of testimony on a proposed ordinance to ban retail pet stores from selling dogs, cats, and rabbits from commercial breeders. We're taking a closer look at the potential impacts with Petland President and CEO Joe Watson, Corey Minkin with the ASPCA, and Ed Sayer with the Pet Industry Joint Advisory Council. Listeners can connect with our guests. Phone lines are open at 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And if the Joe, if the commission passes this ordinance, what could it mean for Petland in Sarasota? Would this effectively put them out of business?
Well, this ordinance that was presented, one of the commissioners even stated it was poorly written, needs a lot of work, so we're not exactly sure what the ordinance will look like. As it stands today, John, this ordinance as written would prevent any local breeders, hobby breeders, from even selling the puppies at their facility. So my expectation is there's going to be a lot of work put into this ordinance. But this ordinance definitely would create an extremely negative impact on the Petland store. Petland's different than what the activists will all say, well, Petco, PetSmart, they can survive without selling pets. And that's true. That's a different business model. 70% of our revenue is on the sale of pets, and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of activists that don't like to hear that. But the fact of the matter is, we are a true American-style pet store, and the largest seller of pet products in the United States, not surprising, is Walmart, followed by PetSmart, followed by Petco. So to think that a local pet store owner in Sarasota is going to be able to compete against Walmart, PetSmart, and Petco is a bit naive. And these ordinances create a real slippery slope. Once you ban the sale of animals that come from regulated USDA inspected kennels, the question is what's next? What will the activists push next on retailers? Is it a ban to push anti-leather? So it creates this slippery slope. Clearly, an ordinance like this will damage that Petland store in Sarasota. But the question is, where does all this stop?
And would you potentially consider taking legal action if Sarasota County did go forward with, you know, adopting such an ordinance as it's written now? I know that in the past, the county's attorney had advised them not to take action because the ordinance potentially would have opened them up to lawsuits.
I think it's certainly something that we would consider. I think in the prior time, the last time this was up, there was a case filed in Phoenix and the initial district court ruled in favor of the city of Phoenix. However, that case has been appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court. I should also mention that from a legal perspective, the other day in Sarasota, I think the assistant attorney made a comment about Cook County in Illinois. Cook County passed a similar ordinance, and it's been upheld in a district court. That case is being appealed. But more interestingly, out of Cook County, that I want to make sure we highlight is that outside of Chicago, Cook County is a big county, second largest county in the country. Every single town in Cook County that has a pet store exercised their home rule option and opted out of that ordinance, with the exception of one, a Hoffman Estates, who's now considering it. So using Cook County as a template for success and how this is being done all over the country, this movement is really taking off. Cook County is a great example of how local communities can see through some of this ordinance noise. So it's certainly something we would consider.
All right. And would it be problematic for pet stores, do you think, to, you know, make animals available for that are there for adoption? And by that, I'm just referring to, you know, we know across the country shelters are typically operating, you know, at capacity or near capacity or beyond capacity.
No, John. In fact, at Petland, 20% of our stores in the United States don't sell puppies or kittens. Over 20%. So we have a very robust program called our Petland Adopt-a-Pet program. And so our Adopt-a-Pet program partners with local rescues and shelters, and we have found homes for over 350,000 homeless animals. And we're very active with the local community. Our vice president of operations is a board member with the local Humane Society. So adoptions, and as Ed pointed out, think adoption first. For many, many people, that makes perfect sense, and we encourage that. And we work with rescues, and we work with shelters. We have kennels in our stores that are dedicated to shelters and rescues. So by all means, that's an important part of who we are. Our mission statement starts out: we match the right pet with the right customer, meet the needs of both. It doesn't say anything about a purebred. It doesn't say anything about a pet store puppy. It's the right pet. And so for some families, that right pet is a shelter pet. For some families, that right pet is an adoption pet. In some families, that right pet is a specific breed puppy. And so we do our best. We're not a perfect company, but we do our best to deliver at a very high level.
And, you know, when it comes to these, you know, customers who are looking for a specific breed, are you concerned that, you know, if there weren't pet lands around, say, in the Sarasota area, they're not going to necessarily turn to the shelters. They're going to go to, you know, your backyard breeders, your breeders who necessarily maybe aren't regulated as well.
I think that's true. In fact, there's evidence of that. And I'll give you two examples. One is obviously the 18th Amendment, which, by the way, started out very similar. If you've ever watched the Ken Burns documentary, it's a very similar movement that's taking place with the sale of pets in the United States. And what happens when you take away the only regulated source of something? People turn to the black market. They turn to the underground. Now, obviously, the 21st Amendment tells us that doesn't work very well. I was in England speaking at a conference, and I had my driver. I asked him, did he have any pets? And he said he did. He had a dog. I said, well, where did you get the dog? And he said, well, unfortunately, we bought it off the internet because we just don't have time to go visit the breeders. In the UK, you can only get a dog specifically at a breeder, and so you're forced to go to the breeders, with some minor exceptions. And so the population typically will go to the internet because it's much more convenient. And that's what we're going to see in the United States when all the pet stores are closed. Again, that's the only regulated source of puppies in the United States are pet stores. And in the state of Florida, the state regulates the pet stores, the federal government regulates the pet stores, and it's more regulated than a lot of other industries in the state of Florida. So when that door closes...
Actually, Joe, if I can jump in on that, that's not entirely accurate. The federal government does not regulate pet stores, only the state governments do. And I'd love a chance to address what we're talking about when we're talking about federal regulation of the breeders. I think what most consumers are not aware of is that USDA regulation of breeders does not amount to much as far as humane treatment goes. And that's been very, very well documented time and time again. You know, regardless of whether the raids that we have personally done at the ASPCA have been of USDA licensed breeders. We have a database of over 20,000 photos at this point taken by USDA inspectors inside licensed breeding facilities. And some of the violations that those photos document are absolutely atrocious. We are talking about gaping wounds on dogs that have gone left untreated. We are talking emaciated dogs. We are talking about dead dogs. We are talking about dogs whose feet have slipped through wire flooring and they have been so badly injured that you can see the skin and the bone and the muscle through the skin. And we're not talking about minor violations. And these are the breeders that are supplying pet stores. These are the licensed breeders that Joe is talking about.
Corey, are these, as you're saying, these are facilities that have, you know, basically been given the thumbs up by the USDA, and this is where these things are being documented still.
John, I don't think the federal government does regulate puppies at pet stores. So, Corey, the federal government does have their hand in the pet store trade, and I don't think that the pictures that you have, the USDA has not given those a thumbs up. I believe those pictures were taken along with violations issued.
Joe, have those breeders been put out of business? Are they still supplying puppies to pet stores? They are.
I have no idea.
Across the board, they are. The USDA very, very rarely, if ever, shuts down a breeding facility. They may be cited for a violation, and there may be a fine that goes along with that. But they are never told to stop operation, and the pet stores do not stop buying from them generally.
Corey, is there really even a legal definition for the term puppy mill? Does that in and of itself make it somewhat problematic?
It does. There's not. You know, there have been a couple of court cases that have tried to define it, but there really is no standard legal definition of the term. It does pose a problem mostly from a consumer rights front. You know, if you, as a consumer, walk into a pet store and ask them if they get their puppies from puppy mills, and the pet store owner or the pet store employee says, no, we don't, they're completely within their legal rights to do that, because they may define puppy mill very differently than you define it. So there's never really a case where it will amount to fraud. It means that pet store owners and operators can pretty much say they don't get their puppies from puppy mills no matter where they get their puppies from. You know, maybe all from facilities that we in the humane movement would consider to be puppy mills. You know, it's clear from this conversation that my definition of puppy mill and Joe's are pretty different, even though, you know, there has been some agreement, across the industry, across the pet industry and the animal welfare industry about what amounts to a puppy mill. It seems that that's not being translated into practice. And, you know, in an effort to... Sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to read something quickly. Actually, Corey and I have known each other for a long time. The ASPCA, along with HSUS and Petland, Petco, and others, put together a definition of what a puppy mill is. We do agree on what a puppy mill is.
We do, but that's not implemented as far as buying practices go in most pet stores. So we actually...
Well, I guess that's the point. Most pet stores...
Right. And we just filed a petition at the USDA, with the USDA, asking them to dramatically improve the standards of care that are required for commercial breeding facilities, licensed commercial breeding facilities. If you look at that document, and it is available on our website, you will see that right now a USDA-licensed breeding facility is legally allowed to keep breeding dogs in cages that are about 6 inches longer than the dog's body in each direction, on wire flooring, stacked on top of each other, breeding every female dog at every heat cycle for the dog's entire life. When you ask the public if they think that that amounts to humane treatment, across the board, huge majorities of people say no, it is not a humane way to treat dogs. Yet that is commonplace in the commercial breeding industry, specifically in USDA-licensed breeding facilities.
Joe, I don't
know. Corey, I would disagree with that. I've been to a lot of these facilities. I don't see that. And, Corey, I'm not sure you've ever been to one, so I'm not sure you've seen that. So I'm not sure that statement's actually accurate.
Hey, have you?
But, again, you can, through regulations, you can really, again, keep them out. You can, you know, even with the petition filed, it's this continuous demand that's going to require and hopefully push higher standards. And there are commercial breeders who have incredibly high standards. They don't not exist. They exist, and they we want the highest practices from the pet store at the retail level, the highest practices from the breeder, and you want to drive that kind of demand and expectation to the public. And we certainly need more of that, and the demand is there that we're going to have it.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with that, but I would love to know, Joe, what percentage of the breeders supplying puppies to Petland use wire flooring? What percentage give them more than the legally required USDA cage space? What percentage give their breeding dogs a rest between litters? What percentage exceed the USDA requirements? Because by and large, from what we're seeing on inspection reports and on photos from the USDA, breeders are not exceeding those standards. In many, many, many cases, they're not even meeting those standards.
And Corey, you and I, we both agree that the standards need to be improved. Most of the breeders that I've visited do exceed. In fact, the state of Missouri has the most stringent standards and requirements that exceed the Animal Welfare Act. And other states are followed suit, but we both agree that the minimum standards are not steep enough, or not tall enough for these facilities. And you know, there's this project going on at Purdue that's a real science-based project. It's just not, we think it should be this, or we think the standards should be this. Purdue University's actually, and PJAC and Petland, we've all been a big part of helping push this along. And it's taken a little longer than we like, but at the end of the day, we'll have science base to say multiple surface flooring is a benefit, or maybe it's not. Maybe the science comes back and says, look, it's not a benefit. My guess is it will. So we agree on the fact that we have to do a better job in this country. The question is, the twofold question. The question is, do we use science-based standards, or do we do something that's more anecdotal? And then the other is, what do we do about the 83% that aren't licensed and inspected, that are selling on the Internet, that are selling through flea markets, that are selling through rescues? What do we do about those?
Well, we're tackling this issue from all fronts, Joe, as are most of the animal welfare organizations that are involved in this fight. We are not just looking at the pet store supply chain. You know, we are constantly out there educating the public about why it is such a bad idea to buy a dog online. I don't know if you saw, I'm sure you saw, HSUS just did a giant expose on the flea market puppy industry. We are working those channels as well. The fact of the matter is, this is an industry that has been incredibly inhumane to dogs for decades. They have had tens and tens and tens and tens of years to try to solve these problems, and they have not done it on their own. They have not proactively changed the systemic problems here. And as a result, the animal welfare industry has finally gotten set up, and we finally said, we're done waiting. We're done waiting on the glacial movement of this industry to try to make these dogs' lives better.
And Corey, just if I could ask, if you close all the pet stores tomorrow across the country, how many breeders will go out of business? How many puppy mills?
I can't tell you. That's an impossible statistic to estimate.
The number is zero. The number is zero. And so back to the Sarasota issue. I don't see the national groups, national welfare groups, and there's a big difference between animal welfare group and the local activists. We're not seeing a call for the closing of all pet stores across the country by ASPC and ASPCA and HSUS. However, that strategy is only going to force breeders who are currently being inspected by the federal government to become uninspected. They'll start selling on the Internet. They'll start selling in flea markets because Ed's right. The demand for dogs is greater today than it's ever been. And supply
is
lower.
Well, actually, Internet breeders are required to be licensed now. The USDA has just not gotten on top of all of them yet. So that is a piece of the industry that hopefully in the coming years will be much better regulated than it currently is.
Corey,
I think it would be much more difficult for breeders to evade the law the way that they have by selling dogs over the Internet.
Corey, is that something that's changed recently? Because a lot of the literature I've seen from both sides has really said buying animals on the Internet is a bad idea.
It is a horrible, horrible idea. and it is something that has recently changed. The USDA passed a new rule in 2013, I believe, might have been 2014, to finally bring Internet breeders who are selling puppies to the public sight unseen under federal regulation. That being said, That simply means that that segment of readers will be subject to the same standards, the same inadequate standards of care that pet store sellers have been subject to for quite some time. So it will have an impact in that there will finally be eyes on those dogs in many kennels where they're currently, or where there previously were not. That is an impact in and of itself. But that being said, the only way for a consumer to really be sure that their puppy is coming from a humane environment is to go visit that environment themselves. You can't do that when there's a middleman involved. You can't do that if you go to a pet store instead of directly to the breeder to see how the breeding dogs are treated. And that's really the distinction. That's the key distinction, I think, that a lot of consumers miss. We're not talking necessarily about the treatment of the puppy that you're about to purchase. We're talking about the treatment of that puppy's parents who are forced to live their entire lives in a commercial breeding facility. So the only way to make sure you're getting a dog from a source that's not abusing those animals is to go visit yourself and see where the breeding dogs live.
Let's take a phone call now from Robert in Cape Coral. He's been waiting patiently. Robert, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Hello there.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that what's being discussed on this show are pretty much nuances, and they're nuances that may have been discussed a couple hundred years ago about slavery. You know, are we treating the slaves well? Are we treating the slaves badly? And the argument that we should keep the breeding of dogs and breeding of animals for pets legal so it can be regulated is akin to suggesting that we should legalize slavery so we can regulate it, because it's going on anyway. You know, we have agricultural and sex slavery. You know, animals are treated in such a way that they're taken from their families, they're mutilated, they're imprisoned, they're kept sometimes in solitary confinement, and then they're often killed. And we call it humane. I mean, it's 2015, and it's the human consciousness hasn't risen to actually accepting them as individuals, then there's something very wrong here.
Well, thanks for the call, Robert. Joe, I would just ask you regarding the USDA, as far as their regulations for commercial breeders, would you support, I mean, I'm not necessarily asking if you would support the ASPCA's recently filed petition about improving standards, but in general, do you think improved standards are needed?
Oh, I think they do. The HSUS proposal, and I didn't realize ASPCA was a party to it, but I think that's it's not something that's unreasonable by any means. It's the question becomes: is it science based, or is it more of an emotional? Where's the science behind the standard? I think for too long we've had an opinion that a cage should be so big, that a turnout yard should be so large. What Purdue brings is the science behind it. These are veterinarians. It's one of the most prestigious veterinary schools in the country, and Purdue has taken this on, saying, look, we'll put together some standards that actually help the pet, help the pets at the kennels. And so the question, I guess, John, is do we want to continue down the path of non-science-based or science-based? And we applaud the movement forward, but where does it go? I'm not a veterinarian. I don't know. But I guess we would lean more towards the science-based. But certainly we agree to standards. And by the way, what HSUS proposed, a significant number of breeders in the United States would already comply with.
I'd actually love to address some of the things that Joe just mentioned. First, I wanted to clarify that the standards that the improvements that we're asking for from the USDA are almost entirely in line with standards of care that Joe, along with a whole host of other pet industry folks, agreed to as humane standards when we had met with them a few years back. So they are based on standards that they all agreed were necessary for the humane treatment of dogs in commercial breeding facilities. However, they would not agree that those standards needed to be legally mandated at the time. So, you know, in my mind, put your money where your mouth is, if this is what's humane required of all breeders, but that's not a step that they were willing to take. So I think that that's a distinction that's important to make. And at the same time, I also wanted to point out that there is no scientific basis that I have ever seen for the current standards of care that are required by the USDA. It is incredibly difficult to pinpoint from a scientific standpoint. How can you say how much welfare improvement is necessary for the well-being of a dog? If you ask me, I don't think dogs should be kept in cages their entire lives, period, no matter how big those cages are. But, you know, we recognize that that's not a reality in the commercial breeding industry as it is currently operating. So what we're asking for is enough space to actually at least give these dogs some semblance of quality of life.
And Corey, John, Corey's exactly right. We were a part of that, a big part of that. The difference is in that process, Purdue came along and said, we would like to take a shot at this from a science-based perspective. And so that if it got derailed for any reason, it wasn't a lack of wanting to increase standards. It was, what's the question is, which way do you want to go? Do you want to go with what feels good and ever seems good? And by the way, Corey will agree, not a single veterinarian that I'm aware of was a part of those, or not a single breeder was a part of the creating those standards that HSU has put forward.
That's not true, actually.
I'm not aware of the breeder, but Purdue University is a very accredited, a very well-known school, and so they came along and said, let us take a shot at it, and so we said, okay. So if we're guilty of anything, we're guilty of leaning towards science versus a continuation of a non-science-based standards.
All right. Well,
my point is, we're
about out of time for the conversation now, so we are going to have to leave it there. But I do want to say thank you to all my guests for a very lively conversation today, a lot of points of view to take into consideration. Corey Manking, Ed Sayer, and Joe Watson, great to speak with you all.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John. Thanks for the opportunity.
Corey Manking is Senior Director of the ASPCA Puppy Mills Campaign. Ed Sayer is President of the Pet Industry Joint Advisory Council. And Joe Watson is President and CEO of Petland. We're taking a short break, but when we return, local strategic planners are hard at work developing the Lee County 2040 Transportation Plan. Taking into account projected population growth and development, the plan seeks to identify specific projects and areas that will need transportation improvements in future years. And it's not just looking at motor vehicle traffic. We'll take a closer look at the developing plan and how the public can get involved. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to Gulf Coast Live on WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.